I'm pleased to present Sarah Faulkner and Matthew Morgan Brown. Matthew will be speaking first, and he's from the Ottawa Movement Defense and the Indigenous Peoples Solidarity Movement Ottawa. He'll be speaking on his experience of arrest and how we can support Roger Clement, who was recently sentenced to 3.5 years after pleading guilty to arson at an RBC branch in May 2010. Sarah's a Toronto-based journalist. She helps publish Certain Days, Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar, and is a member of the Toronto Anarchist Black Cross, which produces For Struggle Meg, which is a zine of analysis by and for political prisoners. And Sarah will be speaking on prisoner support within the context of local arrests. So I guess we'll first hand this over to Matt.
Hi. First, I want to acknowledge the fact that we're on unceded Indigenous territory. Next, I wanted to thank you all for coming out. I really appreciate it. It's great to get this opportunity to talk to everybody. I don't consider myself an expert on political prisoners or prisoner support or the prison industrial complex. I really appreciated the analysis that was given here. I've been much more involved in Indigenous solidarity. That's sort of, as an activist, what I do. And I happened to get arrested on June 18th with Roger Clement and Claude Herridge, and we were accused of firebombing the RBC, the Royal Bank of Canada branch in the center of Ottawa, in a middle-class neighborhood in Ottawa. I'm not going to talk directly about the firebombing. I support it. I support Roger. I support that action. That's not the only type of action I support. I do believe very strongly in a diversity of tactics. I believe that there are so many ways that we need to be working to transform this system, to transform the prison system. A quote that I really like is, we need to be achieving non-reformist reforms on the road to liberation. So with the end goal being prison abolition, there are things that can be done to improve the lives of prisoners, to improve the lives of political prisoners. I believe that letter writing to political prisoners, I believe in all sorts of support work, in demonstrations. I believe in community building is so absolutely important. So I just want to clarify that although I 100% support the firebombing of the RBC, I also see that part of the struggle, especially at this particular moment in time, is not the priority or not the main focus. So I'm also a member of the Ottawa Movement Defense. I was being supported by Ottawa Movement Defense, and then when I got out of prison and I was able to organize again, I got involved with us. And I'll just briefly, Ottawa Movement Defense is a group that started up to support the June 18th arrestees, Roger Clement, myself, and Claude Herridge. Most of the work was behind the scenes, sort of getting visits, finding out what the rules were, mailing us things to read in prison, a lot of fundraising, getting the word out that we'd been what had happened, because people didn't necessarily know. There's still a lot of lack of clarity, so I'm hoping to be able to clarify some of those things. And now I'm hoping, I don't know whether the group, it's going to happen, in what way it's going to happen, but to also get involved in doing more prisoner justice stuff, prison abolition stuff. I think it's a really important part of how we're going to get to where we want to get. So I'm going to go through some updates, updates about Claude, updates about Roger, and updates about myself. Roger is in Kingston. He's in one of the minimum security facilities there. While he was in Millhaven in the Max, where everybody goes for classification, he was there during the prison riots. He wasn't actually in one of the sections where the prison riots happened, but he was there while that happened. And people are often wondering about how they can support Roger. One of the main ways is to write him. He's also one of the things actually that I found amusing once we found out that he'd done it was that in Ottawa, The RBC firebombing was attributed to anarchists. And Roger is most definitely not an anarchist. He's a communist. I mean, he knows a lot of anarchists. He works with a lot of anarchists. There's not like a real sectarian thing. But it was amusing how quickly the media just sort of decided that anarchists did this without any factual basis. He's a big supporter of the Cuban Revolution, and I know that he'd appreciate people learning about Cuba, what's going on in Cuba. I'm sure that's something he'd love to talk about. So I just wanted to bring that up. We were doing fundraising. We're still doing some fundraising. We're not in the same boat as we were before. We don't have as many legal costs anymore. So we're not doing a lot of that. But we do want people to know what's going on with him and to be aware. People are going to be giving him visits. We're still trying to. Prisons are not exactly transparent. They aren't helpful about telling you how you can see your loved ones, how you can see your friends. But it's really great to be down here talking to you all. The next person is Claude. And we all, just to clarify, we all had, me, Claude, and Roger all had really distinct legal situations. The state chose to prosecute us in very different ways to what we got accused of was different. For example, although Claude was arrested on June 18th and the headline was people who did the firebombing were arrested, he was never charged with arson. Never. He was charged with breach of probation and
it was like improper handling of ammunition is the other charge.
There was three charges. He still got the improper handling of ammunition, and there was two other charges, both of which were stayed. So he's a little bit still in sort of that limbo bail condition area where he got really strong bail conditions, even though he had no criminal record up until that point, and he has the charges he was facing were very minor. Because he got his bail hearing while the GHG20 was going on, they imposed really draconian bail conditions, $140,000 bail. He had to be with his sister at all time, or he had to be at home with his family. So some of those have been relaxed a little bit. He's got more freedom than he did, but he's still in that sort of limbo land. He lost his job, and he's waiting for those final charges, which we don't expect to result in jail time, to be dealt with. But they're dragging those ones out. Well, I'll get into that in a second. My charges. I was charged with the arson. But when they finally went to court in November, they stayed the charges because they didn't have any evidence. I spent a month and a half in the Innis Detention Center, which is it's a jail, not a prison. It's where people go before they've been sentenced, before they've been found guilty of anything. I had outstanding charges from a highway blockade of Highway 117 with the Algonquins of Barrier Lake. I had to go and serve. I got 20 days for that. And I had to go and serve that sentence, and then I was finally allowed out on bail. But as far as the way that they did things, it was something that our lawyer commented on. They really rushed Roger's sentencing and my thing and Claude's stayed charges. They rushed all those. Usually, we would have been looking at 6 months to a year and a half, even. To get those issues dealt with in court, it was 3 months. It was 3 or 4 months, and they were done. I have a bunch of different speculations about why exactly that happened. But now the one remaining charge that Claude has is dragging out. Now it's dragging out March because he's got these bail conditions, and that's how they're punishing him. So they're dragging that out. It's going to be March. Maybe it'll be longer. It's not really entirely clear. So yeah, I mean, justice is not uniform. They pick their tactics, they pick their strategies, and they use different strategies against different people. There's all the people on house arrest, all the conspiracy charges that are coming up. I guess I'm just trying to make the point that the justice system is not disinterested, that it's not fair, it's not just. It's the injustice system, as a lot of people call it. Yeah, while I was in there, during the G20 protests. I was arrested on June 18th, which was the beginning of the People's Summit in Toronto, and we all feel that that was a very, they picked us up on June 18th in order to distract attention from that thing happening so that the big news story would be these terrorists had all been arrested rather than the news story being that a bunch of social justice people had gotten together in Toronto to oppose the G8, to oppose austerity measures, to oppose all these things that are associated with the G8 and G20. While I was in there, I didn't see a lot until all of a sudden I saw a lot of cop cars going up in flames. And I have to say, it made me really happy being in there. Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of love for the Black Bloc. I respect the courage of the people who do choose to do that, and I also don't feel that. I mean, if we're talking about violence, that some broken windows and some burning cop cars are in any way comparable to the kind of violence that the state and corporations engage in every day. I do think that people, I mean, we should be thinking about the effectiveness of any tactic, the effectiveness of any strategy. What's the effectiveness of lobbying? What's the effectiveness of writing letters to your MP? What's the effectiveness, and also what's the effectiveness of the Black Bloc? And I think that's a legitimate question, and it's a discussion that needs to be had. Again, I believe in a diversity of tactics, and I don't believe in just one tactic. I don't believe in just the Black Bloc tactic. I don't believe that militancy is always the answer. I think it has its time and place, and I think it's important to be able to have respectful dialogues about which tactics are effective when, and how those tactics fit into a larger strategy. The other thing that I'm just gonna note, and I know. All I know about it was this one news thing that I saw on the TV, but there was a bombing in Trois-Rivières of a recruitment center by a group calling itself Révolution Internationale or something like this. And they bombed a hydro tower before. They've done a few things like that. And I don't know anything about them, but I was also, I mean, I don't want to sound really like selfish and egocentric, but I was like, you know, okay, the cops are going to be looking for those people too. They're not going to they're going to be looking for all these Black Bloc people, and they can't, you know, the more they have to do, I mean, it ends up, I feel like, well, Sarah will probably talk about this, they end up targeting a small number of people who they really feel they can get, so it really sucks for them, but, you know, when there's a lot of stuff going on, it makes it harder for them, I feel it makes it harder for them to get us, or to get people who are engaging in militant direct action. And the final thing I'm going to talk about is about police infiltration. In the group that I mostly work with, the Indigenous People Solidarity Movement of Ottawa, we had a police infiltrator. It's not like a rumor or anything. It's something that came out in court. He was involved in the Ottawa activist scene for about a year. He was involved in our group for about a year, and it's also there was also another informant, or I think I was an undercover police officer in a group called Common Cause. So I'm just going to quickly talk about Common Cause, because what happened with him was he got accused of being a cop, and there was nobody had any, people had a lot of weird stories about him, but didn't have any evidence that he was a cop. And then he went and said to his group, you know, I'm not a cop, but I'm feeling scared and I'm not going to be involved. And he just sort of disappeared. And Common Cause, you know, they had relations, they trusted this guy, they cared about him. So they sent out like sort of a public statement saying, you know, this is fucked up. You can't just do that to our activists. And he ended up being a cop. I'm sure the police felt good about that one, right? The police were like, okay, we created some division, we created some conflict and some hostility between different activists. I mean, the fact that he was a cop is really important. It's also really important the way that people said, the way that people outed him, because they did out him without any evidence. And if there's no evidence, then, I mean, you can't, I don't feel you can publicly out somebody unless you can actually prove that's the case. We don't want to develop that like paranoia. We don't want to always be looking over our shoulders. We need to be able to trust each other, and we need to be able to have that sort of solidarity. So I don't know exactly what should have happened, but maybe, you know, people like private conversations, like, okay, be careful. Like, you know, this was weird. That's sort of what we were doing with Francois. And we were just to contrast it. Francois gathered a lot of information, I'm sure. He was around. He had a lot of conversations with people. He talked with a lot of people. He went to events. He helped out. And I'll get into how he helped out a little bit more. But there's no, as far as we know to date, there's no criminal charges that have come from his infiltration. So we consider that a good thing. I mean, there was no criminal charges that came from the common cause thing either. But there's also not really, he didn't really manage to create many divisions or any divisions within our group, within the Ottawa activist community more broadly. And that would, I mean, that was like a combination of luck and security culture. It wasn't that we were all so amazing that we, you know, had figured everything out or anything. But people didn't trust him, and people were, you'd sort of tap somebody on the shoulder and say, you know, just be careful, just like, be aware if you're working with this guy that he may, some people feel like he might be a cop. So, and I'm going to get a couple, just sort of for future reference, the way that he was in our group was he didn't play he never played a prominent role. He didn't take on the public roles. He didn't do public speaking. He didn't do media work. He didn't do things, he didn't do things that were like sort of out front. He avoided getting his picture taken, as far as we can tell. So, what do you think, taking everybody's pictures? He did a lot of like he had a van, which is something Brenda and Khalid in Guelph in southern Ontario, who are police informants, they had trucks and vans. And Sean, the other guy from Common Cause, had a truck, and a lot of the movement doesn't have a lot of trucks a lot of the time. The movement doesn't, you know. So they're going to change what they're doing. They're going to change their modus operandi, I'm sure. But he would drive people around, drive to sites, drive, you know, a lot of like that kind of stuff. A lot of like the support roles that are so, I mean, I consider them really important. And he would build trust, and then he could have, you'd drive somewhere, you'd have a conversation, whatever. So one of the things, sort of the thing that got us really kind of suspicious was that he had this story about being married to an Inuit woman, and he'd disappear for a month or two. And, it could have been true. It couldn't. It was who knows. Then he had this story about working for his brother tree planting, and he'd disappear for a month or two. And it was just a little like that's clearly when he was like actually having his real life. He was on vacation or like de-stressing from being undercover or seeing his actual family or doing whatever it was he's doing. But like just this like boop, he was gone. It was just a little odd. It was a year long infiltration. They invested a lot of money. He had an apartment. He had like people had been to his apartment. He had furniture. He had like, you know, he had some kind of like, they really invested some resources into this. And our conclusion was that he was focused on the anti-Olympics organizing, which the IPSM Ottawa was, we didn't do a lot, but we were the group that most steadily did anti-Olympics stuff and Indigenous solidarity stuff. We feel that like that's been identified as like a priority by police forces to like, in Indigenous struggles is what's the real priority, but Indigenous solidarity is sort of a subset of those Indigenous struggles is also a priority. And then finally, I think people would be clear that he was also there for anti-GHG20 organizing. He got involved with the radical anti-capitalist anti-GHG20 organizing. So yeah, I'll stop there and pass it over to Sarah.